This is The Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller. Written by J.D. Kirk and produced by B. Heal. Episode 3. The Reeds lived in a mid-terrace house with a front garden that was roughly the size of a postage stamp, but immaculately cared for. A multicoloured monoblock path led up to a rustic-looking front door that was completely out of character with the house, and different to the other three doors in the block. The number 18 was embossed on the frame above the door, but an ornate wooden sign announced the house name as The Willows. It was, from what Logan could see, the only house with a name on the block, and probably in the whole of the estate. The street leading up to the house was dense with police and news vans. A couple of uniforms out front were keeping the scrum of journalists from getting too close. One of them shifted a traffic cone as the focus arrived, making room for the car directly in front of the house. The excitement levels of the journal crowd picked up. Microphones were produced, cameras were trained, throats were cleared.
"You ready for this?"
In the passenger seat, PC's Sinead Bell nodded.
"Ready."
"Okay, keep your mouth shut, don't swear, try not to punch anyone."
Sinead gave a thin smile.
"Will do."
"Huh? Oh no, I wasn't talking to you, that was for me,"
Logan said. Then he opened the car door and stepped out into the rabble of press. The questions came thick and fast.
"Any updates?
What are you doing to find Connor?
What do you think happened?"
Logan ignored them, letting the uniforms keep them at bay. He opened the garden gate and indicated for Sinead to go ahead of him. He was about to close it behind him when a familiar voice rang out over the general hubbub.
"Is it happening again, DCI Logan?"
Logan stopped momentarily. His eyes met a silver-haired journalist with all the plastic insincerity of a used car salesman. He held an iPhone in one hand, extended like a microphone. One eyebrow was raised, and there was the beginning of a smirk tugging at one side of the man's mouth. Ken Henderson, freelance journalist and thoroughly horrible bastard. Granted, those two things usually went hand in hand, but Henderson seemed to take it to another level. Annoyingly, he was also a good reporter, with an eye for a story and a brass neck that could deflect bullets. He'd covered a lot of the Mr. Whisper stuff back in the day, and had asked a lot of difficult questions about the accident that had left Petrie in his current condition. Logan groaned inwardly at the sight of him, but did his best not to let it show on the outside. Is it happening again? Why the hell was he asking that? What did he know? He looked across the faces of the gathered press. There were only 9 of them for now, but that would only be the beginning.
"The only thing happening again is you lot getting on my tits. I'll answer one question, and one question only."
The mob erupted, firing questions at him. He ignored them and pointed to a young, hapless-looking lad who practically screamed, "Local press."
"You!"
The young lad's eyes widened in shock.
"What? Me?"
"Aye. And that was your question. Threw that opportunity away, didn't you?"
Logan said. He briefly met Henderson's eye, then shot the rest of the group a contemptuous glare.
"Now, how about you all try pretending to be human beings for once and give the family some peace, eh?"
With that off his chest and feeling marginally better about the world, Logan clacked the gate firmly closed and stalked up to the front door with Sinead hurrying along in his wake. After the handshakes and the introductions, Logan sat in a big, solid-looking brute of a couch that immediately tried to swallow him into its cushions. He perched himself near the front, sitting upright, and smiled gratefully as Katrina Reed handed him a cup and saucer. Connor's mother was awkwardly tall, with a short, feathered haircut that gave her a vaguely elf-like appearance. Her eyes were like dartboard bullseyes, red in the middle, a ring of black running around them. She had tried to disguise her grief with makeup, but it hadn't held up well. Given the circumstances, Logan wasn't going to hold it against her. She was doubtlessly exhausted, but her movements were alive with nervous energy, her face twitching, her fingers knotting together, her gaze darting to the window at every sign of movement.
Thank you.
Katrina's eyes blurred with tears, like this simple expression of gratitude was the thing that might finally break her. She sniffed and pulled herself together, though, and turned to PC Bell, who stood off to the side of the couch.
You're sure I can't get you anything, Sinead? Tea? Coffee?
I'm fine, thanks.
Sinead replied, smiling kindly.
Juice. There's apple juice.
Katrina's lips went thin. Her throat tightened, the thought of the unused carton of apple juice in the fridge almost cutting through her defences again.
Honestly, I'm fine. Thanks, Katrina. You should take a seat.
How can I take a seat?
The venom in her voice caught her by surprise and her eyes went wide.
I'm sorry.
Sinead shook her head.
Don't be.
Katrina bent, brushed some fluff off the arm of a big round armchair, then perched on it next to her husband. If Katrina Reed was a bundle of anxious energy, Duncan was the polar opposite. He sat slouched in the armchair, one elbow leaning against the armrest, his hand jammed against the side of his head like his skull was too heavy to stay up without support. There was something haunted about his expression. A step removed from the world, or a step behind it, maybe. Logan had seen similar looks before. Too many times before. His clothes looked slept in, or more likely, not slept in. They were a stark contrast to the figure-hugging jeans and neatly pressed purple shirt his wife wore.
That's a good cup of tea,
the DCI said, setting the cup back in the saucer. He looked around for somewhere to sit it, then settled on the polished wooden floor at his feet.
Now, I hope you don't mind, but I'd like to ask you both a few more questions.
Katrina was quick with an,
of course.
But Duncan gave a vague wave of a hand, as if half-heartedly batting away a fly.
We've already gone over it. There's nothing more to say. Why aren't you out there finding him? Why haven't you found Connor?
Rest assured, Mr. Reed, we're working on it. I promise you, we're doing everything we can to get Connor home safely and as quickly as possible.
Duncan's hand dropped into his lap. He exhaled.
Sorry, I know you are. It's just...
It's frustrating having to go over it all again. I understand it's a difficult thing to have to relive. But we all want Connor home, and you can help make that happen.
Duncan nodded and drew himself upright in the chair. His wife's hand slipped into his, and he squeezed it.
You're right. You're absolutely right, Detective.
Jack, please.
Jack? Go for it. What do you want to know?
Logan caught Sinead's eye, then pointed to the couch beside him. She hurried over and sat down, producing her notebook without having to be prompted. Promising, Logan thought.
The package that arrived last night, the teddy bear,
he began, eyes flitting between the husband and wife.
Who found it?
It was the policewoman. The, what you call it?
Liaison.
Yes, her. Jess, was it?
Logan shot Sinead a look. She nodded to confirm.
Jess French.
There are a few things left on the step. Flowers, mostly. Someone left chocolates.
Roses.
Sinead paused mid-scribble.
Which?
The other three occupants of the room looked at her, and she wilted slightly.
You said roses. Did you mean the flowers or the chocolates?
She deliberately avoided meeting the DCI's gaze.
Because it can be both.
The chocolates.
Does that matter?
Well, I mean...
Sinead began. Then she finally relented and caught the look from Logan. She quietly cleared her throat.
Sorry, no. Go on.
You sure?
Sinead blushed and nodded, fixing her gaze firmly on her pad as she jotted down the now clarified information. Logan offered a smile by way of apology to the Reeds.
So, The liaison officer arrived in the morning, picked up everything on the step and then brought it in.
Right.
She's lovely. She's been very kind.
I'm glad to hear that. And when did you notice the Terry?
Duncan and Katrina exchanged glances.
Must have been, what, just after 7?
About 7:15. The yoga alarm had just gone off.
Sinead looked up from her pad, began to open her mouth, then thought better of it. Luckily, Logan asked the question for her.
Yoga alarm?
I do yoga every morning. 7:15.
She sets an alarm.
I set an alarm. Keeps me from forgetting.
Logan set out the timeline in his head.
So, yoga alarm, liaison turns up, finds the Terry. Is that right?
No. The liaison turned up around 7. We were looking through everything that had been left. Well, I was. Duncan wasn't really in the mood, but I think if people are going to go out of their way to show support, it's the least we can do to look at it.
She shot her husband a sideways look. Clearly this had been a bone of contention between them.
The cards looked nice up on the mantelpiece.
Her eyes went to the bare mantle and she deflated a little.
Of course, the other policemen took them away.
We'll try to get them back to you as soon as we can, Mrs. Reed. Now, you were saying about the alarm.
Right. Yes, the alarm rang. I turned it off, and it was around then that I spotted the Teddy.
She gave a little shudder and seemed to shrink into herself. Duncan gave another squeeze of her hand, but if she noticed, she didn't let on.
There was something about it. Something, I don't know. Do you believe in energy?
Logan tried to keep his face relatively impassive.
Energy?
Spiritual energy. Positive. Negative. Energy. I just got a bad feeling from it. That was all. A bad vibe. It was dirty, like it had been in a puddle.
Her eyes were glassy, as if she could see the soft toy in the air in front of her.
Was it one of Connor's?
Katrina and Duncan both looked surprised by the question.
I don't know. Maybe. He has one similar, I think. I mean, not all manky, but maybe.
If you could try to find out for us, that would be useful.
Then he turned his attention back to Katrina.
So, sorry. You got a bad feeling from the teddy bear. And then...
And then we saw the envelope.
Her throat tightening. The sentence ended in a breathless sob. And Duncan gave her another hand squeeze before taking over.
We thought it was another card,
he said. His own voice not much better.
And then...
He looked away, his jaw tensed, the effort of holding everything back making him shake.
We opened it.
Who did?
Logan inquired, as gently as possible. Duncan gestured wordlessly to his wife. If she'd looked upset when recalling the soft toy, the thought of the image in the envelope was positively haunting her. Her face seemed to grow thinner before Logan's eyes, the features drawing together as if finding comfort and safety in numbers.
I didn't realise what it was. Not at first.
She was whispering, but not through choice. It was as if her throat had constricted to the point that only the faintest suggestion of words could escape.
It was just...
She pressed the fingers of her right hand against her skull, as if trying to push down something bubbling up inside it.
It was just a shape. That was all. I couldn't.
The tears came then. Big, silent sobs that contorted her face into something ugly and raw. If she was hiding something, she was bloody good. Whatever else might have happened, the grief was real. Not that Logan had any reason to suspect her of being involved. Neither of them. Not officially, anyway. And yet, he couldn't help himself. It was right that the courts worked on the innocent until proven guilty principle. but Logan tended to approach investigations from the opposite end. Still, if Katrina Reed was involved in the abduction of her son, 2 decades of police instincts had let him down. He gave the couple a moment to console each other, then offered an apologetic smile.
I know it's difficult. You're doing really well. Maybe we can go back to Friday.
Katrina nodded hastily, relieved to be able to switch out this recent nightmare for one that was less vivid and fresh.
Mr. Reed, you were with Connor?
Aye, we went for a walk after school, with the dog.
Logan glanced around the room.
Meg, she's out back. She goes mental at new people.
She doesn't bite. She's not like that. Just barks.
She's a biddable big thing when you get to know her. Just noisy.
Meg is certainly that,
Katrina said. She half laughed. Then everything about the situation came rushing back in, shattering her moment of respite.
Can you talk me through what happened?
Logan asked, keen to get past the dog chat.
You went for a walk after school.
Duncan sat up straighter in the chair.
We drove up to Lanarkin. It's a good walk. You don't see anyone. We were just doing that, just walking, and then...
He took a breath, centering himself.
Meg ran into the trees. We shouted, but she wasn't coming back, and so...
He ran his tongue across his lips, his eyes locked on Logan. There was a hopelessness there, a desperation, a cry for help.
So you went after her. It's okay. I'd have done the same.
Duncan nodded wordlessly.
And then what?
I shouted. I kept shouting to him to make sure he was okay. I didn't want to scare him. He gets scared. We have to leave the light on for him.
This time, it was Katrina's turn to do the supporting hand squeeze. Duncan's nostrils flared and his mouth turned downward. His eyes filled with fear, self-loathing, and everything in between. His tears, when they fell, were like the waters of purification, cleansing everything away and allowing him to struggle on.
So I shouted, and he shouted back, and then one time, he didn't.
He stared past the DCI to the wall beyond, as if watching everything play out there.
I knew something was wrong. I don't know how, but I knew it. I ran back, and he was gone.
Duncan raised his eyes to his wife, like a penitent man before God.
I only left him a couple of minutes. Just a couple of minutes, that's all. I swear.
I know.
She slid down onto the seat beside him, and he sagged against her.
I know.
And you didn't see or hear anything? There was no sign of anyone else in the area?
No.
They said he was probably hiding in the trees. Is that true?
We're looking into it, but aye, that's our theory at the moment.
Logan told her. He shifted his attention back to Duncan.
How was Connor during the walk? Anything seemed different?
He was quiet.
Doesn't sound like him,
said Sinead, glancing up from her pad.
No, he was talking and everything, just not the same. Not his usual self. He normally doesn't shut up, and he had swimming at school that day.
He never stops talking about swimming,
Katrina added. The words seemed to take a physical toll on her, and she sagged further into the armchair.
Did you ask him about it?
Aye, he said he was fine, but he just... I don't know. There was something.
Logan glanced down at Sinead's notebook to make sure she was writing this down.
Did he say anything else? Had he fallen out with anyone at school, maybe?
At school? You think someone from school did this? They're 8!
Just pursuing all avenues, Mrs. Reed.
You already know who it is. We looked on the internet. We know all about him.
About who?
Mr. Whisper, he's done this before, hasn't he?
Duncan tried to quieten her, but she pulled her hand free from his and batted his protests away.
It's him, isn't it? It's the same thing. The teddy, the photo, it's the same.
We caught him, Mrs. Reed, I can assure you, whoever took Connor, it wasn't...
He rolled the words around in his mouth, as if unable to spit them out.
Mr. Whisper. Owen Petrie, the man responsible for those children's...
He caught himself just in time.
The man who took those children. He's in Carstairs. We believe the individual who took Connor is trying to emulate Petrie's abductions.
He killed them, didn't he?
Katrina asked, her tone harsh and accusing, daring him to say no, or praying he would perhaps.
He killed those boys.
Logan hesitated, then gave a nod.
He did, aye. But we're not dealing with the same man. There's no saying that's his intention with Connor.
There's no saying?
Duncan yelped. He jumped to his feet, his eyes blazing.
That's the best you've got. Our boy's out there, and that's all you can tell us. There's no saying.
Like I say, I understand it's frustrating, Mr. Reed. But
it's not fucking frustrating. A Rubik's Cube's frustrating. A jar you can't get the lid off. Not this. Not this.
Sinead stood up and took Duncan gently by the arm.
We know. We understand, Duncan. We do. And we're going to do everything we can to get him back home, all right?
At the back of the room, the kitchen door opened, and Jess, the family liaison officer, looked in. Logan dismissed her with a shake of his head, and she slipped out of sight again. The fury that had propelled Duncan to his feet was already burning itself out. He locked eyes with Sinead, and the hand on his arm became the only thing holding him up.
I'm sorry. I just...
You're fine. We get it. I understand.
Of course you do, sweetheart.
She reached up and took one of Sinead's hands for a moment.
After what happened with your mum and dad.
Sinead smiled awkwardly and very deliberately did not meet Logan's inquisitive gaze. Instead, she helped Duncan back down into the chair beside his wife. Duncan kept his eyes on the floor, embarrassed by his outburst.
He didn't mean that,
Katrina said, putting a hand on her husband's shoulder.
He did. And he's absolutely right. Cards on the table. I can't begin to imagine what you're going through. None of us can. And I don't have a lot of information I can give you right now. But what I can give you is my word. We will not stop until we find out who's responsible for this and get your son back. Whatever it takes, whatever we have to do, we will bring Connor home. That's a promise.
The Reeds said nothing, but both seemed to grow in stature a little, buoyed by the speech. Duncan wiped his nose on the sleeve of his creased shirt, screwed the heels of his hands into his eye sockets for a few seconds, then gave a nod.
What else do you want to know?
Logan caught Sinead's gaze, then flicked his eyes to the couch beside him. She sat again, pencil poised.
You said he seemed out of sorts, but was there anything else? Anything specific that seemed unusual?
No, he was just worried about the dog getting lost. It was only because he was panicking that I...
His forehead creased. He blinked, caught off guard by something.
Wait, Ed.
Katrina shifted in the chair so she could look at him.
What?
Ed. He asked about Ed.
Ed who?
Next door Ed? Why was he asking about next door Ed?
I don't know. He asked if I liked him.
If you liked Ed?
Logan cleared his throat, drawing their attention back to him.
Sorry, who is this we're talking about?
Sorry, Ed, Walker, I think.
He looked to his wife for confirmation.
Walker.
Ed Walker, yes. He lives next door.
Only bought the place a few months back.
Renting.
His wife corrected. She dialed back the certainty a touch.
I think he's renting anyway.
Duncan shook his head.
He must have bought. He was working on converting the loft just before he moved in, I think. Lot of racket anyway.
Which direction?
Logan asked, steering the conversation back on track. Katrina drew a look to the wall on her left, but said nothing.
That way,
Duncan said, gesturing in the same direction. He sat forward, his friend deepening.
He asked if I liked him. and then he asked if you liked him.
Katrina gave a little snort.
What, me?
Duncan nodded.
Aye, he said, does Mum like Ed?
Why would he ask if I liked Ed?
I don't know. I asked him, but that's when he got panicky about Meg.
I'm sure it was nothing,
Katrina said. The abruptness of it made Logan's polar sense tingle, but he let it slide for the moment.
Almost certainly, but we'll arrange to have a chat with him.
He stood up. Sinead hurriedly finished scribbling a note, then got to her feet.
Thank you for your time. You've been very helpful. If you need anything, anything at all, please just ask.
Jess.
She'll keep you up to date and get you anything you need. And if the press lot start to get too annoying, you have my full permission to set the dog on them.
Duncan and Katrina moved to get up, but Logan motioned for them to stay seated.
It's fine. We'll see ourselves out. Thank you again.
He turned, caught sight of the pack of vultures loitering out front, and then turned back.
The back garden. Can I get next door from there?
Aye, but the dog will go mental.
I'm sure we'll cope.
Are you going to see Ed?
Katrina asked. She shot the briefest of glances at her husband.
Next door, Ed, I mean.
Aye,
said Logan. He looked over at the dividing wall, then down at the couple in the chair.
We'll at least pop our heads round the door.
True to form, the dog went bananas when Logan stepped out through the back door and into the garden. Meg raced for him, barking furiously, fur rising on the back of her neck. Logan ignored her and plodded down the steps onto the path. The back garden was a little larger than the front, but less neatly turned out. There were no raised flower beds here, no manicured lawn, just a shed, some stacks of planks, and a whiskey cask the size of a caravan. It had roofing felt on top, and Logan had a vague recollection of seeing something similar before.
Is that a sauna?
He asked, as Sinead stepped out of the house behind him. The dog redoubled its efforts to be an annoying wee bastard.
Yes, sir.
A sauna in Fort William?
The DCI continued. He gestured at the smur of fine rain falling from the dark grey clouds overhead.
Isn't this like the wettest place in Europe?
3 years running, sir.
Sinead replied, almost proudly.
We got a certificate.
Well, I hope to Christ it was laminated,
Logan replied, pulling his coat closed. He sized the sauna up.
Is that normal?
Well, I've not got one myself, sir, but it's got a roof, so I don't imagine the rain's a big problem. Anyway, I think he makes them or sells them or something. He's always advertising them on Facebook.
Down at their feet, the dog upped its barking game from bananas to batshit.
Hello. Yes, I see you.
Sinead said, baby voicing the bloody thing. She squatted down, making the dog skitter back away from her, all its weight on its hind legs.
What's all the noise about? What's all that noise for?
Ignore it.
Sorry, sir?
If you ignore them, they eventually shut up. It'll just keep going if you make a fuss.
Sinead held the back of her hand out to the dog. Meg sniffed it, then gave a tentative lick. Her tail wagged as Sinead stroked the top of her head.
There you go. That's better. See? No need for all the noise.
She stood up, looking just a tiny bit smug. Logan raised an index finger.
Wait for it.
Meg erupted into barking again, and it was Logan's turn to look pleased with himself.
See? Told you. Ignore them. They get bored eventually.
The dog ushered them down the back path and continued to announce their departure as they pushed through the gate and into the alleyway that ran behind the block.
I'd never endorse cruelty to animals,
Logan said, headed for the next gate along.
But I'd happily strangle that bugger if it kept that up.
Sounds quite cruel, sir,
Sinead pointed out.
I'd make it quick. Big hands.
He held up his hands to demonstrate that they were indeed big. Sinead smirked.
Should I be writing this down?
Probably best not.
They stopped at the back gate of the neighbouring house. Unlike the Reeds gate, this one and the surrounding fence were double height, making it difficult to see much of the garden or the lower half of the building. The curtains upstairs were closed in one bedroom, but there were no lights in any of the windows.
Right. Next door Ed, then. Thoughts?
Sinead's eyes widened a little, caught off guard.
He's got a big gate.
He has got a big gate. I was hoping for something a bit more insightful and that wasn't currently staring me in the face, but that's a start.
He put a hand on the handle. It had a thumb-operated latch that clacked metallically when Logan pushed it down. The gate was a little too wide for the gap, and he had to give it a shove to budge it. Logan stopped then, the gate ajar.
What happened to your parents, if you don't mind me asking?
Road traffic accident, sir.
The answer snapped out of her in an instant, like it had been pre-programmed.
18 months ago. Well, 19.
She corrected. And something about the way she said it told Logan she could have given it to him in hours and minutes.
Christ, I'm sorry. You should have said. So now it's...
Me and my wee brother, sir. Aye.
Logan exhaled through his nose, looked up at the house, then pulled the gate closed.
Let's get you home. I'll come back later.
Are you joking, sir?
What?
Well, you think he might be in there, don't you? Connor, I mean. You jumped up off the couch as soon as he told us he'd asked about Ed.
Not necessarily.
Logan began, but it was clear from the way she looked at him that she wasn't buying it.
That's why you wanted to come in the back way, so the press didn't see.
Maybe I'm the one who should be taking notes.
He glanced up at the house again.
Do you know him? Ed, I mean.
Sinead shook her head.
No, never met him.
Right.
Logan pushed the gate open.
Stay close, follow my lead, and don't do anything stupid.
Should I radio in?
Remember that don't do anything stupid bit. That would qualify. We don't want to put the wind up him. Not yet. It's just a routine door-to-door at this stage.
Won't us going to the back door make him suspicious?
Trust me. If he's kidnapped the boy, we'll soon be the last of his back door's worries.
It took Sinead a moment to understand what the DCI meant.
Oh, prison.
They've been known to be somewhat unwelcoming to certain categories of prisoner. Or overly welcoming, depending on your point of view.
He dropped his voice down low.
Now, mouth shut, ears open. Ready?
Ready, sir.
Well, you fell at the first hurdle on the whole mouth shut thing. But we'll let it slide this time.
Raising a hand, he knocked on the door. It was a classic policeman's knock loud. No nonsense, and clearly announcing its intention not to go away until someone answered. When no one did, Logan knocked again, even louder this time. He stepped back and looked up at the windows. The smear of rain had been promoted to a drizzle, and he had to squint in order to see the top half of the house. There was a set of chrome-coloured blinds in the kitchen window, slanted at an angle that only let Logan see the ceiling when he tried to peer through.
Mr. Walker! Can you come to the door, please?
Maybe he's not in.
Sinead ventured. Then she immediately realised this was the most obvious thing she could have said and cursed herself inside her head.
We'll make a detective of you yet,
Logan told her absentmindedly. The living room curtains were open, but the window itself was too high to see through. Logan found a cracked terracotta plant pot and turned it upside down below the window. It creaked ominously when he stood on it, but somehow managed to take his weight.
See anything?
Logan wiped a layer of grime off the window with the sleeve of his coat. The room was dark inside and barely resembled a room at all. It was more like a campsite, with the only furniture a folding camping chair, a little plastic table, and a pyramid of tenant's lager cans, presumably all empty. He wasn't sure that last one technically qualified as furniture, but it wasn't the time to split hairs. A pot noodle sat on the table, a fork sticking up through the peeled-back foil lid. From his angle, Logan couldn't tell if it was empty, full, or somewhere in between.
Not a lot, but it doesn't fill me with confidence.
He put a hand on Sinead's shoulder.
You should go.
What? Why?
Because I'm telling you to, Constable. You've done well. You show a lot of promise, but you should get home. Call it a night.
Sinead looked past him at the living room window, then up at the closed curtains above.
But I want to help.
And that's to your credit.
He jabbed a thumb back over his shoulder.
But in a minute, I'm going to hear a cry for help from within this house, giving me no choice but to break this door down and investigate. It wouldn't be wise for you to be here when that happens.
Sinead chewed her bottom lip. Her eyes searched the house again.
What if we both heard it, sir? I just don't think you should be going in there by yourself.
I'm a big boy, and I've been in a lot worse places, believe me.
He smiled, not unkindly.
Go home, Sinead. That's an order.
Sinead hesitated, then nodded.
Yes, sir. But can I make a suggestion?
Logan nodded. He watched as Sinead lean past him, turned the handle, and pushed the door open.
It's the Highlands. We don't always lock our doors.
Daft bastard,
Logan muttered, although it wasn't clear if he was referring to himself or to next door Ed.
Thank you, Sinead,
he said, pulling on a thin smile. Reaching into his pocket, he produced a pair of thin blue rubber gloves and began the laborious process of wrestling his oversized hands into them.
Now piss off before you get us both into trouble.
The air in the kitchen was old and stale, flavoured with something damp that clawed up inside the nostrils and down the back of the throat. Logan eased the door closed behind him and listened for any sign of movement from elsewhere in the house. Nothing. There were no appliances in the kitchen, just the open voids and trailing wires where a washing machine and oven should have been. Water pooled from the end of a hose in one of the cavities, forming a puddle on the scuffed lino floor. Outside, the evening was drawing in, and the last of the sunlight had a fight in its hands to get through the blanket of cloud. The kitchen was washed in a gloomy half-darkness, but Logan could see just enough to know that there wasn't a lot worth looking at. He quietened his breath and moved to the door leading out of the kitchen, the bottom of his coat brushing against his knees. The living room looked much like it had from the window. Camping chair, plastic table, stack of lager cans. They were empty, as he'd guessed, but there were a few unopened tins in a spar bag under the table. The pot noodle was two-thirds eaten. Logan touched the side of the pot. Cold, he thought, although the gloves made it difficult to be sure. There was another window at the far end of the room that looked out onto the street at the front. Logan could see a couple of press vans out there, but the journals themselves were still assembled outside the Reed's house, waiting in the rain for him to come striding down the path. They'd be disappointed. Keeping as far from the window as possible, Logan made for the room's second door. It rubbed against the carpet as he eased it open, and he stopped a couple of times to listen for the sound of anyone moving around upstairs that would suggest someone had heard him. Silence. On the other side of the door was a small hall, barely larger than the inside of a hotel lift. The house's front door was on Logan's right, an internal door on his left, and then a staircase led up to the floor above. There was no furniture in the hall either, just a worn-out old mat, a stack of letters on the floor that mostly looked like junk, and a little mirror fixed to the wall around Logan's chest height. The door on the left led to a cupboard. A disposable waterproof jacket hung from a hook, and a couple of pairs of trainers had been left on the floor. Logan squatted and picked a couple of the shoes up. There were no size markings inside one of the pairs, but the other had a tag sewn into the inside of the tongue. Size 10. Setting the trainers down again, Logan returned to the hallway and crept to the bottom of the narrow stairs. A bathroom door stood open at the top, the light through the dimpled window mottling the shadows on the staircase walls. Logan held his breath, listened. A couple of cars passed outside, One of the uniforms ordered some overeager press bastard to keep back from the gate. But from inside the house, there was nothing. There were 13 steps. Every single one of them creaked and groaned beneath the carpet as Logan made his way up, sending out a fanfare to anyone lurking above. By the fourth step, Logan decided to abandon his attempts at stealth and just charge up the stairs as quickly as he could. He braced himself as he reached the top, fists clenching, ready for someone to come swinging at him from behind the banister. No one did. The cramped upstairs landing was as empty as the floor below. There were four doors, including the bathroom. Logan spent a second giving that room a cursory once over. A similar damp smell to the one in the kitchen loitered around in there too, thick and claggy in the DCI's throat. Two of the other doors were open. The other had been pulled fully closed. Judging by position, it was the room with the closed curtains he'd seen from outside. He checked the other two first, both bedrooms, he supposed, although they both lacked anything in the way of beds. They both lacked anything in the way of very much, in fact. One had a threadbare carpet, while the other had bare floorboards that had been badly painted in an ill-judged shade of lilac at some point in the dim and distant past. The decor in both was shabby and long past its best. And Logan got the sense that neither room had been in use for some time. More importantly than any of that, neither room was occupied, so no big bastards were likely to come rushing up behind him when he entered the other room. He stole a glance down the stairs, listened for a moment, then turned his attention to the fourth and final door. The floorboards upstairs were more solid than those on the staircase, and he was able to approach the door in relative silence. He waited outside it, breath held, ear pointed to the wood, ready for anything, but prepared for nothing. There was no point doing all the announcement stuff. He wasn't officially here. Instead, he pushed down the handle and simultaneously put his shoulder to the wood, throwing the door wide. The smell hit him almost immediately, the sour tang of sweat mixed with the sweeter notes of cannabis. The heavy curtains and lack of light from elsewhere made it hard to make out the details of anything. But there was a single mattress in the corner of the room, a dark lump curled up on top of it. Child-sized, motionless. No. God, no. Not again. Logan flicked the light switch and a bare bulb sparked into life, pushing back the darkness. Logan saw the mattress properly, and the knot in his stomach slackened a little. A sleeping bag. Just a sleeping bag. That was all. He gave it a nudge with his foot. Empty. The rest of the room was a graveyard of crisp bags, pizza boxes, iron brew bottles, and other junk food detritus. Logan carefully opened the lid of one of the cardboard pizza containers. There was half a slice left. Ham and pineapple.
Bloody savage,
he muttered, nostrils flaring in distaste. Closing the lid, he took out his phone and snapped a photo of the logo and phone number printed on the box. That done, he patted down the sleeping bag. Tucked in at the bottom was a little wooden box containing half a packet of green Rizzler, some torn-up strips of what looked like a cereal box, and a few crumbs of hash that had struggled to choke a mouse. He replaced the box, then turned, still crouched, and took another look at the room. It was grim, no doubt about that. But there was nothing to suggest that Connor had been here, which meant that Logan was officially breaking and entering without anything even vaguely resembling an excuse. Time to go. He began to stand, then hesitated. On a hunch, he slipped a hand beneath the mattress. Almost immediately, the side of his pinky finger bumped against something solid. Raising the edge of the mattress, Logan found himself staring down at an old battered laptop.
Shite.
Logan spat, torn by the discovery. Two very different next steps presented themselves to him. He spent a few moments considering the implications of each. Then, reluctantly, he lowered the edge of the mattress again, covering the laptop. He made for the door, took another look around the room, then switched the light off before stepping out onto the upstairs landing and pulling the door closed. Logan was at the top of the stairs when a thought that had been niggling at him for the past few minutes pushed its way forward. His eyes crept up to the ceiling and to the hatch built into it. He was working on converting the loft. A tingling crept up the back of Logan's neck. The thin rubber of his gloves creaked as he flexed his fingers in and out. And then he stretched up and slid the snib aside. An exhalation of stale air hit him as the hatch swung down, revealing a yawning chasm of blackness. There was a ladder attached to the hatch. Logan fiddled with the hook until the bottom half slid down to the floor at his feet. Reaching up, he took hold of one of the rungs and shook it, testing its sturdiness. And then, with his heart thudding in his chest, he began to climb. If next door Ed was converting the loft, it wasn't immediately apparent what he was converting it into. Logan swept his phone's torch across it, taking it all in. A few planks had been nailed across the exposed ceiling beams, forming a haphazard pathway leading to the wall that divided this attic space from the one next door. Or, what was left of the wall at least. A hole had been knocked through it, the crumbling bricks stacked up on another clumsily floored area. The planks, used for the flooring, looked like the same ones in the Reeds' back garden. Presumably, they had been nicked at some point. The rafters creaked ominously as Logan made his way across the makeshift floorboards. The hole in the wall wasn't particularly big, but large enough for an adult to clamber through, provided dignity wasn't high on their list of priorities. The loft on the other side of the wall was empty, aside from some thick rolls of insulation between the ceiling joists and another couple of the same planks Logan was standing on. They had been laid across the insulation, but weren't nailed down. Logan snapped a couple of pictures of the hole, a few of the loft beyond, then did another sweep of the space around him. The wind whistled through gaps in the sloping roof. A percussion of rain played on the tiles overhead. The oval of torchlight tracked across the exposed beams and probed the corners where the floor met the roof. Just like downstairs, there was nothing to actively suggest that Connor had been there. Still, even before venturing into the attic space, Logan had been keen to talk to Ed Walker as a matter of urgency. Now, after this, he was suspect number one. Technically, suspect number only, but Logan didn't really want to dwell on that right now. After taking another few pictures, he clambered down the ladder, the rungs groaning in protest as he picked his way to the bottom. Once down, he manhandled the bottom part of the ladder back up into position, then closed the hatch and fastened the snip. He was halfway down the stairs when he stopped. Logan stood in the mottled darkness, chewing his bottom lip.
Bollocks.
His eyes flitted upwards in the direction of the closed door. The journals hadn't expected him to approach around the side of the house, and Logan was almost back at his car before they spotted him. They moved through the rain like a single organism. One that was generously endowed with limbs and heads, but distinctly lacking in moral integrity.
Detective Chief Inspector!
What is the family saying?
Do you know where Connor is?
Their voices were raised, shouting to be heard over the growing wind. Logan muttered something deeply uncomplimentary and fished his car keys from his pocket. The Focus chirped as he thumbed the button, its wing mirrors unfolding as if giving him a welcoming wave.
Is the boy alive?
When will you be making an official statement?
Do you have any leads yet?
Logan shot the approaching throng a glare. If Luke's could kill, this one would have taken out the whole front row and probably left the rest of them fighting for their lives in the ICU. He had just hauled the driver's door open when one voice in particular rose up above the others. One familiar, forks scraping on a plate voice that stirred some primal response deep in Logan's gut. Ken bloody Henderson.
Is it true there was a teddy in a photo, Jack?
Logan tried to rein in the look of shock he could feel spreading across his face, but only managed to temper it a little. He stood there, frozen, the car door held open. The rest of the journalists had fallen quiet. For a moment, it was just Logan and Henderson, eye to eye, the reporter holding his phone out, the microphone aimed at the DCI.
What?
Logan asked, his mind raced.
Where did you hear that?
Henderson shrugged nonchalantly. He said nothing, but there was a little smirk on his face that Logan would have dearly loved to wipe off, ideally with the sole of his shoe.
No comment,
Logan told him. He jumped into the car and slammed the door shut. He sat swearing below his breath for a moment, then glanced in the wing mirror and caught sight of Henderson and his gaggle of bastards hanging around behind the car. Grimacing, he fired up the engine and slipped a gloved hand inside his coat. He took out the spar bag containing the laptop, placed it carefully in the passenger seat, and spent a few seconds considering the ramifications of it. The car's automatic windscreen wipers kicked in, swishing a slick of rain from the glass and drawing Logan's gaze away from the bag with a battered computer in sight. With a final glance back at the houses, Logan crunched the car into first, pulled away from the curb, and set off into the strengthening storm.
This is A Litter of Bones, a DCI Jack Logan thriller, written by J.D. Kirk and produced by Be Here.